Are church compensation issues keeping you up at night? Is your compensation structure for staff intentional, fair, and legally compliant? Join us for this insightful episode of the podcast as we sit down with David Fletcher from xpastor.org for his tips on getting smart with church salaries.
Informing, encouraging, and supporting your church, you're listening to the Excellence in Church Administration podcast from ECFA.
Welcome back to another Excellence in Church Administration podcast by ECFA. This is your host, Michael Martin. And hey, we know that serving in church, it's a busy job and you've got a lot on your plate. So sincerely, we just want to say thank you so much for taking a few minutes to join us today. And I'm really excited for today's conversation with our special guest, Dr. David Fletcher. David is the founder of xpastor.org, which is an incredible ministry to executive pastors and other leaders who serve really in church administration roles, including senior pastors, finance personnel, and board members. David has a true pastor's heart, and he's got a wealth of experience as an executive pastor for 35 years, serving in several churches ranging from 1,000 to 8,000 in weekend attendance. And from an ECFA perspective, of course, we also love David for his heart for the Lord and integrity and excellence in ministry. And he's been such a friend and an advisor to ECFA over the years, and we're so grateful for his support and his heart to serve the church. And I really could go on, but I want to save plenty of time for you to hear from David, a little bit about his story and some great new resources coming from ex-pastor on smart money for church salaries, which is the topic of our podcast today. So David, hey, we really appreciate you being here on the podcast today.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be with you. And that was a wonderful introduction. I hope that my mother hears it.
I hope so too. So, hey, as we get started here, David, I'd love for you just to tell those that are listening in just a little bit more about your background and your heart behind serving executive pastors and other leaders through ex-pastor.
Yeah, I'd love to share that. So I entered Dallas Theological Seminary at the ripe old age of 20 and was a pastor for 35 plus years. I also did some executive education classes at the Kellogg School of Management and the Harvard Business School. That gave me a great little edge to and insights into some business issues. The genesis of the executive pastor problem is sourced in the doctoral dissertation I did for my DMIN degree at Dallas Seminary. I was having a hard time finding resource material, and I thought, I used to be a really good researcher. Maybe I've just lost the edge. I could find nothing in the huge Dallas Seminary library. So I walked up to the head research librarian. How about that for a title? Marvin Hun. I didn't even know that Marvin knew me. Marvin said, "Hi, David, how are you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm doing fine." And then he said, "So you're at Northwest Church, right?" "Yes, I am." "And you're the executive pastor there?" "Yes, I am." Now, this is the head research librarian. He said to me, about the year 2003, "What exactly is an executive pastor?"
Oh, my.
Exactly. Wow. That told me there was no literature on the topic because he hadn't read anything. So what I had to do for my dissertation was I went to newspapers and original church material to draw out source material. Now, since that time, many things have been published. But mine was, believe it or not, the first dissertation on the executive pastor. Out of that, in doing that dissertation and helping churches, we developed this little fledgling website called xpastor.org way back in the early days of the internet. And we saw people from all over the United States and really all over the world beginning to come to this website. And, you know, metrics were so rudimentary in those days. We thought, how are they even hearing about this? Nobody used the word Google at that time. But over the last 15 years, we've seen the website grow to 800 plus free articles. We get, for a micro niche website, we get 400,000 to 500,000 visits a year, and people from the US, Africa, China, Russia, Australia. It really has become a global tool for churches of all sizes. which, you know, in terms of giving away for free, my favorite rabbi says this: good measure, pressed down, shaken together, is overflowing. And we just love to help folks all around this country and around the world with any information that we can.
Wow, that's awesome. No, I totally affirm that and just love the resources that are out there, and going to talk about one of those new resources that's coming out here in just a bit. But I mentioned this earlier, David, and while you're here on the podcast, I can't resist asking you this question. But I mentioned that one of the things that we've loved about working with you over the years is just the heart for integrity that you have. I know personally from our conversations, you just have this desire to see churches model the highest standards when it comes to accountability and transparency. And you've been a faithful advisor to ECFA over the years. And so in all your years serving in local churches as an executive pastor and in other roles and working with other churches, why have those values been so important to you?
Well, the word integrity doesn't mean perfect. It means striving for the best. It means taking the pebble out of your shoe every day. I try and make amends as quickly as possible for my mistakes, and I'm far from perfect. You know, in a marriage, it means you, as Paul says, you don't go to bed angry. There's some sort of mystical thing that happens. It's spiritual, emotional, psychological, physical. It gives the devil a foothold. So when it comes to integrity in our churches, I think we need to make amends for any mistakes that we make as quickly as possible. But it also gets to this concept of, do we really believe the Bible, or are we functional agnostics? So do we just read the parts that we like and skip the rest? Or do we see that the whole counsel of God is really informing our life and lifestyles? You know, the Apostle Paul wrote this in Romans 13, 6 and 7. For this reason, you also pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants devoted to governing. Pay everyone that is owed, taxes to whom taxes are due, revenue to whom revenue is due, respect to whom respect is due, honor to whom honor is due. I don't know anyone who just rejoices on April 15th on paying their taxes.
I don't either.
But if I really thought in my heart that this servant I'm sending the money to is God's servant, and that money may not all be used the way I want it to, but still God is ultimately the one in charge, well, then I should be very honorable in my taxes. And my taxes should be correct. Same thing in the church. We need to live with the rules that we're given. If we don't like the rules, we should make every effort to change the rules, or like ECFA is doing with the Ministerial Housing Allowance, keeping the rules from being changed. But if the government overturns the Ministerial Housing Allowance, well, then we can go back to court, we can try and change the rules, but until that happens, we have to live with them. Because it's not integrity just in a public view, it's really with God that we want to live with and have that sense of who we are.
That's really good. No, you're right. And it just really gets back so much to, yeah, our faithfulness to God and also our witness before the watching world. So I think that's great. So thanks for answering that for us. And I'd love to just kind of switch gears now. We talked about the multitude of resources that have been available, you know, on XPastor since you guys launched in the early 2000s. And one of the things I'm excited about, we've been hearing from you about, is the Smart Money for Church Salaries, the new ebook that is underway and that's going to be coming out soon. I think that's such an intriguing title. And for folks that will be new to this ebook, I'd love for you maybe just to get us started here by helping us understand kind of that concept. What are you thinking behind the title Smart Money for Church Salaries?
Well, Michael, it started off as an ebook at about 80 pages long, and it's grown into a print book. And because of the size and all the charts in it, it'll have to be a full 8.5 by 11 workbook publication.
It has grown.
What it started off as, you know, the opposite of smart, and some school teachers don't even allow their kids to say it, but the opposite of smart is stupid. And as some people would say, let's not pay the stupid tax. Let's not make elementary school mistakes with compensation in our church. We really want to be smart. You could use the word shrewd, but that has negative connotations generally, not in the Bible. Jesus uses the word a lot, but we really want to be smart in giving as much as we possibly can that's fair and equitable to our pastors and our other employees in the church. And we don't want to cheat them out of benefits they could have or should have. You know, Christianity Today just reported in an article by Sam Ogles that a church in the 1980s lost Tom Rainer as a pastor because they weren't paying him a living wage. He said this, even back then, $21,000 was peanuts. So I really, really was struggling. I had to actually sign out food from the food pantry. So in terms of making a mistake, would you want to be that church that lost the young pastor named Tom Rainer from your staff? The problem with compensation is it gets complex the minute you investigate the regulations of the IRS, the Fair Labor Standards Act. Salaries for pastors have unique challenges, such as the Ministerial Housing Allowance, the Self-Employed Contributions Act. Churches have managers who are exempt from the FLSA and support staff who are non-exempt. It's a dizzying, a compilation of terms and acronyms and rules and regulations. To obey the law and to help church staff, all these have to be complied with, and there's no easy fix with the myriad of issues. Senior pastors have to be aware of the principles, and other staff have to become localized experts in implementing them. That's why we developed the Smart Money for Church Salaries.
Perfect. No, that's good. Words like dizzying and myriad, like all of those are just perfect when it comes to this topic. And that's actually a good kind of lead into another question I'd love to ask you. And that is, one thing that's unique that folks will see about this resource that's coming out is, compared to others that are out there, is you're presenting this in a case study format, which it's really engaging, I would say, especially on a topic, you know, even as an attorney and a CPA, I would admit that some of this can be on more of the dry side, you know, with the different legal and tax and other issues that you mentioned. So tell us a little bit more about this case study model. I think that's fascinating. Why did you think that it was a good fit for this kind of message on the Smart Money for Church Salaries?
Well, let's start with the 7 elements of Smart Money for Church Salaries. It's invest in staff salaries with skill. It's handle worldly wealth and excellence with trustworthiness. It's implement a fair and generous compensation guide. Follow federal and state regulations with integrity. Learn from information channels of those with deep knowledge of church finance. Be fruitful and find success in the wise use of finances that God has provided, as measured in changed lives. So when we think about taking those principles and then taking this array of local and state and federal regulations, it really can get dry and heavy and laden very quickly. So the method that we chose was a case study. And a case study presents a pertinent story, and it walks through how problems are solved. A good case is more than just an example. It has depth and it gives perspective in a situation. The Harvard Business Review Press has a book, Teaching in the Case Method, and they said this, quote, "In business education, the case method has been closely identified with the Harvard Business School. Though the approach was not invented on the banks of the Charles River, witness the long Talmudic tradition, the business school is well known for its commitment to an active, discussion-oriented learning mode, disciplined by case problems drawn from the complexity of real life," unquote. And I would put forward to you that the parables of Jesus, because remember, they cited long Talmudic tradition, the parables of Jesus are miniature case studies. Right. For example, in 240 words, the parable of the Good Samaritan has depth and complexity. That's why it's so preachable. So in church and in business, the case study method provides rich soil for learning. Again, as Harvard says, quote, "The case study method enables students to discover and develop their own unique framework for approaching, understanding, and dealing with business problems. To the extent that one can learn business practice in a classroom and the limits are substantial, it achieves its goal efficiently." Would you like to hear about the Wheatfields Good News Church case study?
I think so.
Okay. So
yeah, let's do it.
Okay, it's a compiled case, and Wheatfields Good News Church could be across the street or a few miles down the road from your church. Attendance is increasing, worship is thriving, ministry is booming. It's a dynamic ministry. And as good as things look on the outside, there are problems on the inside. The salary budgets are in chaos. No one is admitting wrongdoing or breaking the law, yet there are strong suspicions that things are amiss. And in the case, we journey, and it really is a journey, as Dan Black begins to understand the problem and work the problem. He's a leader at Wheatfields. We walk with in backroom meetings with him and staff discussions. We step through the thinking of how to solve the compensation problems at Wheatfields. With Dan, we analyze salaries and learn a maze of state and federal regulations. And your goal with Dan is to gather comparative salaries and create a compensation guide. If only the path were that easy. Now, the story of Wheatfields Good News Church is a compiled case study. Several churches are melded into this case. It's a fictitious name so as to protect the guilty and the innocent, kind of a reverse dragnet thing there. And it's compiled from different churches, as no church, I don't understand this, Michael, no church wanted me to publicize their confidential salary information.
You had no volunteers there?
Nor did they want me to air their dirty laundry. They were afraid the feds would come. But the stories, though, are real, and the facts come from churches just like yours. Can I briefly share one of the dialogues, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
Okay, just a few lines here. Attorney, Dan, what are your recommendations for raises? Dan, our staff is working hard. Attendance is up 500 people, 25%. Giving is up 22%. We need to give our staff raises. Attorney, so let me ask my question again. What are your recommendations for raises? Dan, in the sheet I just handed out, I put 4%. In that Wheatfields has never done annual reviews, I'm recommending 4% across the board raises. Attorney, so you want to do a merit increase for all staff. That won't encourage your best performers to excel even more. We need people who can scale with the growth of our church. Is that the best way to invest a raise number that is closing in on $200,000? Dan, it's getting hot in here. I wouldn't have done across the board raises in my business, yet our church has been doing raises this way for its entire history. Entrepreneur, we thought you were going to bring something new to the table, not this same old, same old. That dialogue is based on actual meetings of compensation teams. Here's a question. How many people in your church have been in a compensation team meeting? Probably 4 or 6. So let's pull back the curtain and teach folks what to expect in those meetings, how to get ready for those meetings, and how to do their best in those kinds of meetings. That's what the book is about.
That's great. That is such a good teaser. And as they would say, if folks want to know the rest of the story of the Wheatfield Good News Church, they'll have to check out the book. So, no, that's good. Maybe just as a little sneak peek, maybe we won't have to get into the story, but I'd love for you just to share for those that are on the podcast today that are tuning in. I'm sure they would love to be able to ask you a question, probably with some variation like this, and that is, in all of your experience, David, working and thinking through as you are creating this product and this resource, what are three of the top areas that you've seen where churches can really be smarter when it comes to salaries? What do you think?
First, I would say churches need a solid salary grid and good comparisons. And those comparisons should not just be from other churches. Yes, you want to know what's happening locally and nationally. But people in the pew are leery of only having comparisons from other churches. There's just enough stories out there of churches paying crazy amounts that they're never quite sure that the church data, that they want to base all their compensation data just on other churches. And the book and the workshop will reveal the secret sauce of how to get data from valid local sources that the congregation will be in love with. So that would be a first one.
Okay.
The second one would be a good deal of money is lost, and literally thousands of dollars just is sifting through the hands of our pastors and commissioned ministry directors with a poor ministerial housing allowance form. And I know you have a great one on the ECFA website because I've sent a lot of people to it. So we need a good form and one that is legal. So let's consider a well-paid leader at Wheatfields, Liz Jackson. She made $93,000 in 2017, and her housing allowance that she turned in was for $22,262. And she thought it was good, but the form didn't help her maximize her housing allowance, and her taxable income was $70,000. In 2018, through this study, Wheatfields implemented a new ministerial housing allowance form. Instead of having deductions or, you know, exclusions from income of $22,000, it rose to $35,000. So her taxable income for federal tax purposes, excluding what she'd have to pay on SECA, is $58,000. That's a big difference. She's going to save a lot of money in federal taxes.
Yeah, I'd love to see more pastors learn from that.
You can't pay for a maid, not that many pastors do, but frankly, there's so many things that you can put in the housing allowance. I mean, I don't want to count toilet paper, but you could. You could put it on there. And the third one and final would be people need to create a big burrito salary spreadsheet. And that means every staff person, absolutely everyone, and every single part of their compensation is listed in the spreadsheet. So here's Tasha Turner, an administrative assistant. Tasha makes $40,800. And if you ask Tasha what she earns, she'd say, I make $40,000. Well, but when you tell her, you know, Tasha, we're actually paying, we're required, but you still get benefit of $3,100 in FICA. And your medical insurance is costing the church $9,500. We're putting $800 in your 403B plan, $985 in dental insurance and workers' comp insurance of $490 and life insurance at two times your salary at $455 and vision insurance of $160, accidental death and dismemberment insurance of $40 and COBRA of $12 and long-term disability. You know, Tasha, you're actually earning here. What it's costing the church is $56,433. 38% of that is benefits. Mm. That's how we need to be thinking of our employees, is this is an expensive position. I had an employee and they were making minimum wage and their medical insurance alone was 120% of their salary. Mm. Here's another one. Did you know that for about $100 of taxable income, a church can give thousands of dollars of life insurance to a pastor? $50,000 of benefit is tax-free. But for a few dollars more, the church can double or triple this amount. So they buy $100,000 of insurance. The pastor has to pay the taxable amount of the premium, which is generally, it could be $100 for the pastor of taxable income. That's well worth what they should be receiving. So there's three things for you to consider.
No, those are great. And just to kind of piggyback, if I can, off of that third one, David, the called it the Big Burrito Salary Spreadsheet. Is that the same thing, too, within the book that you talk about? There are a lot of really practical tools in this book as well. But the compensation guide for churches as well, is that kind of all part of the same thing?
The Big Burrito Salary Spreadsheet is the result of a good compensation grid. A grid should have every, not person, but position listed, and then quads, what are the minimum and maximum amounts that are going to be paid for that position, so that you don't keep giving somebody a 4 or 6% raise ad infinitum, and suddenly you're paying, this happened at IBM, they were paying a mail clerk triple what should be paid. They went to rehire the position after the person retired and were shocked at what the person was making. This was back from the, in the 60s. So we want to understand, hey, what is our maximums? What is a fair and equitable wage? Otherwise, you're going to lose a young pastor like Tom Rainier.
Wow. You know, that's good. So that's really helpful just as a sneak peek of some of the content there in the book, and also just, again, some really, really practical tools for folks. I do want to talk really quickly, David, too. You mentioned earlier here in the podcast that there are going to be some workshops coming up as well, some compensation workshops, and we're really excited at ECFA to get to be joining you for some of those. And so maybe just give us a little sneak peek of what folks have in store if they're able to make it to some of those gatherings.
12 regions around the United States where we're going to do it. They're listed on the xpastor.org website. This material is heavy material, so we will be doing 25 minutes of in-depth presentations from the Wheatfields case. I'll be presenting that as well as some nationally noted leaders like folks from ECFA. And then we'll go into 10 minutes of small group discussion, followed by 10 minutes of large group discussion. This is kind of the classic ex-pastor format. This is a deep dive and the issues are complicated. The head can only take in what the seat of education can endure. So we mix it up with lively interactive times. It's practical. Teams should come. We tried to price it so that a team could come. Senior pastors just have to know the concepts. XPs, senior associate pastors, finance directors, and run-of-the-mill, not run-of-the-mill as in average, but, you know, your staff pastors should be there because they're going to be the leaders of tomorrow's church. So let's train them up now. Finance and compensation teams and board members are great targets who should be coming to this event.
Great. And so, David, you mentioned the website, right? So it's xpastor.org. Is that the best place, you know, for folks that are tuning in to be able to keep up with you just generally, but to also look for more information?
It's right on the front page of the website. It's the letter X, not EX, but the letter X as in executive pastor, but xpastor.org. It's a brand kind of like Kleenex or Xerox. Once you know it, you'll never forget it. And all that information is there and live.
Perfect. Well, no, that's great. And hey, I wish we had more time together today, but we're kind of coming up here to the close of the podcast. But hey, David, I just want to say thank you again so much for being our guest today. Look forward to those resources that are to come and to be with you at those workshops, and really just for the great work in the ministry of ex-pastor. We really appreciate you, and we're cheering on all that you guys are doing.
Love the seven standards that ECFA has and how many churches I'm able to encourage. I just encouraged a new nonprofit to join ECFA, and they have to wait until they have $50,000 of income, I think, per year. They're that new. But I said, hey, you know, get in line with some national standards, and ECFA is the place to do it. So it's wonderful to partner together. Thank you so much.
Well, good. Well, they'll be getting started off on a good foot. So, well, hey, in closing here, just as David mentioned, you'll definitely want to stay tuned to the letter X, xpastor.org, to check out the new ebook, the new book, and the upcoming workshops. And we'd love here at ECFA to also get to see you at one of those gatherings that are coming up across the country. I also want to just really quickly here highlight some of the great resources that are on ecfa.church, including webinars, ebooks, and the Online Knowledge Center to help your church be smart, as we've talked about today, with church salaries. David mentioned one of those here on the podcast, the housing allowance worksheets, for example. So for ECFA certified churches, all of these resources come free with your membership. And for other churches, you can check out some of the free helps that are in our resource community at churchexcel.org. Well, a huge thanks again to David Fletcher for joining us today. And for each of you tuning in, please know that we are here to support you, and reach out anytime with your questions at podcast@ecfa.org. And we look forward to being with you again soon for another Excellence in Church Administration podcast. Until then, we pray God's blessings over you and your church.